Hello, welcome to the Millionaire Woman Show, where we'll be discussing leadership, business, and human potential, inspiring you to live rich from the inside out. Unlock your creativity, stretch out of your comfort zone, break through your barriers, take inspired action, and achieve epic results. Now, here's your host, two-time best-selling author, speaker, and certified executive coach, Deborah Kosowski.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Millionaire Woman Show, where we talk about leadership, business, and human potential. And I am super excited. We have a special guest. Unlike any guest we've had here on the Millionaire Woman Show, we have someone, Calvin Corelli. He is an artist, entrepreneur, a CEO of a holistic-focused multi-million-dollar software company called Simplero. Calvin is passionate about helping online business owners do exactly what brings them most alive and is currently working on branching out and bringing all of his talents, including music, spirituality, and personal growth, into an exciting new service for entrepreneurs. Welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you. And I'm checking out those guitars behind you. You showed me your drum kit. I think we're going to make some music here today.
All right. Thank you so much, Deborah. It's really a pleasure to be here. And thanks to everyone who's listening. It's exciting.
And, you know, I checked out your website and it's really interesting. How, in what ways are you going to start incorporating spirituality into the entrepreneurial world?
Well, I've been doing that for I guess 9 years now. So when I founded my software company, Simplero, that was entirely based on spirituality. It came out of sort of this awakening moment that I had in February 2008, where I like finally was like, all right, universe, I'm getting the message. You want me to figure out what I want to do with my life. And then so I sat down and devised this process and went through it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm here to integrate the spiritual side that I sort of learned from my mom with the business side that I sort of learned from my dad, and really make them like one big piece instead of like, you know, on Sundays we're spiritual and on Mondays we're business-like or whatever. Yeah. So Simplero started, you know, grew out of me wanting to teach all these spiritual tools to other entrepreneurs. That was why I made it.
So tell us more about it. I saw it's about email marketing, helping people grow a list. What is the secret to growing the list?
It's really to connect. Well, let me just say I'm no expert on that, actually, in particular. But I mean, it is about like being yourself and standing out and connecting with people, right? Be someone that people can feel and people can relate to, and they're like, you know, they want to talk to their friends about you because you're super exciting. You know, Seth Godin calls it being remarkable, as in people want to remark on you or about you.
So what do you think makes you remarkable?
Oh, now you're putting me on the spot, aren't you? This is my least favorite topic, is trying to talk myself up. I don't do it very well. But I think it's funny because like in the recent weeks, and I've been giving interviews and meeting a bunch of new people, and the thing that I hear more than anything is like, you are so interesting. You're really interesting. And I think it is that approach, like I'm hardcore about business and money and making money and all that. And at the same time, I don't consider it like something I'm doing, and I'm very not attached to any specific outcomes. I'm not saying I don't get scared like the rest of us and sometimes have a sleepless night or whatever, but I'm really just thinking about it more as, you know, dancing with the universe. I'm not trying to, like, it feels like every time I try to force things through and like decide like, now I'm going to make this happen, the universe smacks me right back into my place and is like, yeah, no, that's not how it works. You know?
So you've heard the phrase, trust the process. And I saw on your website, everything is as it should be. Mm-hmm. How can people actually get into that zone of believing that to be true? Because I know myself, when it comes to trusting the process, I'm like, okay, just trust the process. Everything right. is as it well, should be. And it can be very difficult. So what do you do?
Well, I would flip it around and say, what are you doing to make yourself believe that everything is not as it should be? Because clearly it is. It's, I mean, things are whatever they are. So whatever you think about them is not really, you know, doesn't really change what things are. So it's that process of like, no, it shouldn't be that way. And you, like, once you start to think about that, you very quickly realize that it's the thinking that it shouldn't be this way, that it should be different, that actually causes the pain. So let's stop doing that. And that's, I mean, and that thought is, it's not something that we're doing voluntarily, but it's something that we are doing and we've been trained to do. So you're just like, every time you catch yourself thinking that things should be any way other than what they are, you're like, wait, is that actually true? No, it's not. Huh. What does it feel like when I don't think that thought? If I wasn't able to think that it should be different, you realize I'd actually feel much better. Ah, you know, it's a nicer place to be. And from that place, you're in your best position to do something about whatever it is that you want to do something about.
Because then what I hear is, if you stay in that other space, you're not going to take the action steps that you need to actually go through and do the things, because you're like, oh, you're fighting that process. You're fighting what should just unravel as it folds.
Exactly. Well, and I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this too in your life. Like when I look back over, say, the last 10 years of my life, there's been so many moments where I've been working really hard at something that turned out to not really matter. You know, like, you know, whatever it is, some feature that was never finished on Zimplero, or some sales page for some product that I realized, you know, I don't care enough about to really do, or like whatever it is, like it didn't end up mattering. And so what if we just like pulled all of that back and allowed ourselves to get into this place of just like, I'm not even going to lift a finger. I'm not going to do anything until I really feel the impulse to do that and the energy to do it in the moment. And then the fear is that we'll never get anything done, and we'll never like accomplish anything, and we'll just like go hungry and die or whatever. But it's not gonna happen. And what happens is that when you peel away all of this busy work and all of these things that we do in order to not feel something that's trying to come through underneath, then some deeper layer can emerge, right? And then we can maybe step into that purpose that has been waiting for us all the time.
So what would you suggest to someone who is in that process? They've been working at it for a while. They're not seeing the results that they want. And, you know, people will say, well, that's just a reflection of you. But what would you suggest to them to help tap into that purpose and be at peace with being in that process?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it depends. There's lots of angles to this, actually. Let me see what comes up here. I look away because, like, that's how when I like trying to tap in and feel stuff, I always look up. People sometimes get weird about that. I think it's, I mean, it's like, what is something that frequently happens is like, for a long time, I was struggling financially and I was like, oh, I can't handle it. I can't handle it. I need to get this like under control. And it was very uncomfortable. And it wasn't until I was like, all right, so what if it just stays exactly this way for the next 10 years? Like, what would I have to come to terms with within myself? And for me, that was about feeling like that my worth was tied to my financial results, and that, you know, in order to feel worthy, I needed to be more financially successful, and realizing, and just like at first just going into that feeling of worthlessness. All right, I feel terribly worthless. And you realize, all right, so I feel worthless. So what? It's not a big deal. It's just, I'm feeling worthless. And then you get to a point of like, maybe I am worthless and maybe that's fine. Or maybe I am not worthless. Or maybe I'm like very worthful or something. And you kind of get to that. It's not really about anything other than just that feeling. And it's not really, really harmful, but the harm isn't trying to be being so afraid of that feeling, mm-hmm. doing things to not feel it.
Yeah. And what I hear is every feeling that we have, positive or negative, they're all temporary. It's mm-hmm. how much energy we put actually into it to sustain being in a great mood, or, you know, shifting from the bad mood to the good mood.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of fascinating because, like, as you go on the journey, it's like, you know, as you kind of detach, it's like a lot of people will use meditation as a way to, like, try to calm the feelings and not feel and try and kind of escape from the feelings. And I don't believe it. Like, I think feelings are there to be fully felt and embraced and stuff, but there's stuff to be fully felt and embraced, but without the identification, right? It's like, I'm really feeling anger inside me versus, like, I'm super angry.
Right.
You don't want to be super angry. You want to feel the anger inside you. But it's like, as that detachment of, like, these are just feelings arising within me, and they're not my identity. They're not who I am, not even in the moment. It's there is a certain kind of intensity of life that you kind of lose a little bit, and you're like, oh, if I could just, like, really believe in this, like, you know, excited feeling just one more time, and they're like, ooh. But it's not, it doesn't have the same thing anymore. And you learn to kind of ride that wave of just being like, yeah, it's still, there's an underlying deeper beauty to it when you stop being addicted to the ups and downs of life, the drama of life. You know what I mean?
So how have you used your feelings and emotions and embraced them, leveraged them to up-level your business?
Well, so the beautiful thing about your emotions is that they are the key for you, that they're the way that you connect with your intuition. So, but the thing that happens is if you're like I was, you know, like, grew up stuffing all of my emotions and not really feeling anything, and it was just like a deep mess inside. And it is the metaphor that I use about it is like, you have these reservoirs of old feelings. So someone says something and it triggers that old feeling of anger or sadness or whatever it is. And so you have these outbursts that are not really about what's going on in the moment, but they're just like someone just pricked a hole in that like bag of stored, whatever that was. And so these kind of need to be cleared out. And so every time that happens, instead of being like, you know, defensive or upset about that, you're like, ah, thank you. All right, now let me process that and maybe go back and hold that little guy who was hurt when he was four or whatever that was. And as you do that more, you get to this place where you're more just present with your emotions in the moment. And that lets you tune into your intuition. So I think that's the key gift is to that it lets you feel what's, you know, that inner knowing and that inner voice. And really what I try to do as much as possible is just live from that place day by day, moment by moment. Like, what am I feeling called to do here?
So what has been the key to success for you?
Definitely this has been to know myself and to actually want myself. For most of my life, I was so obsessed with who I thought I needed to be in order to be, you know, worthy and approved and acceptable and all that, that I didn't even care to get to know who I was. And like, I was like, I don't really know who I am. I just know that I don't like it. I need to become this person that I think I will like, you know, which is crazy. But interestingly, my dad, a couple of years ago, he was like, son, I never really understood you. I never really knew who you were, and I didn't really like you very much. But now I'm starting to see you a little bit, and I actually think you're kind of cool. It was so funny because it was like, that was exactly how I felt growing up. Both, like, that was how I felt in my dad's relationship to me was, and it was kind of how my relationship to myself was for all these years. I don't really know who I am. I just know that I don't like it, whatever it is.
And do you think it's because he came to a place of being curious and decided to learn more about you?
I think what happened was that I became financially successful, and that let something inside of him relax, and then he could actually start to pay attention.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's that fear that parents maybe have, wondering if their kids are going to be okay.
Yes, absolutely. He'd have to have that. I mean, and for some reason that was never... Well, I guess to some extent, but it wasn't, I mean, I always knew that I was going to figure something out. It was just going to be my own way. But it was so relieving to hear him say that finally, because it was like, you know, you get these mixed messages like, I love you. And then you're like, but I don't feel it. Like, and like, what does this feel like? I don't understand. And then he was like, ah, okay, now it makes sense. It's not me that's crazy. My sensations and my instincts about this were right. And, you know, I don't blame him at all. It's that's how that played out.
So how has that impacted your growth as a business leader?
What exactly?
That feeling that, you know, you were different, not sure if you felt that love, that connection with others. How has that played a part in other areas of your life?
It's played a part in every area of my life, definitely. I mean, it was just in kind of seeing what it is that I have to offer. Even like for me, when you're like, what makes you like different or interesting or that, like me, like not being able to really answer that question or being super uncomfortable with that is like a manifestation of that. It's been really challenging for me to find good people to work with because I didn't, you know who I was or see my own value. And you know, it affects my relationships. It affects things all around. It has to, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love, you know, how people describe you as interesting, because what I've learned is if you want to be an interesting person, you need to lead an interesting life. And if people aren't living life to the fullest, which based on what I've learned about you, you truly jump in and you seize and feel the whole package of life every day. So I'm curious, with all of this excitement and being interesting, and why did you end up changing your name?
Yes. Changing my name happened because the confluence of a couple things. One is I never liked the name I was born with. I was born Lars Holger Pind, or in Danish, Lars Holger Pind. And I didn't really like any part of that name. And when I moved to New York first in 99, it was always just a mess of trying to explain people like what my name was. And like my last name would be Pino on all the letters I got, because it was P-I-N-D, and people looked at that and they were like, that can't be true. Let's make it an O. That sounds better. And right now my butcher is actually Pino's Meat Market, but that's neither here nor there. And then I got into numerology, or I met some people who were into numerology, and then I was like, you know what, let's just change it. And then so with numerology, it's kind of like astrology, but for letters and names. And so basically, based on your birth date, you can do the math backwards and figure out like what are the ideal numbers and number of names and like values for each name. And then you just pull up a list. I made a piece of software, obviously, that like pulls all the first names and last names and makes list of names that match those numbers. And then I just picked some names that I liked. And for the last name, we had to come up with one that wasn't used by anyone in Denmark, because we were still legally in Denmark at the time. So yeah, my wife and I, we ended up changing our name with numerology. And it's an interesting process, because I'm not going to say, well, I believe in numerology and it's absolutely true. It's just like, I believe in it. I'm open to believing in it enough to be like, yeah, what the hell? Like, what's the worst that could happen? Let's try this. And it's been amazing. My life is like dramatically different now from it was before that, in ways that the numerology would predict. So that seems to indicate that it's true. It's not proof, but it's, you know, it's not disproving it either. But the most interesting thing I actually think is that whole relationship with identity, of like, who am I, and being fluid in identity. I think that's a very important lesson, is like, we have this thing where we think that we need to be the same person or be a certain way, or like, I am like this, I'm not like that. And I don't think that's how it works. I think we can just like rediscover ourselves moment by moment and day by day. And like, nobody says we have to be the same today that we were yesterday. Like, where did that come from? And so by literally changing your name, new passport, new social security card, new driver's license, all of these things, that's, you know, that messes with your head in a really interesting and good way.
Do you think it planted a seed for you to step into being the person you saw yourself to be?
Do I think I planted a seed for?
Yeah, like it's kind of like planting the seed, shifting your mindset to show up as the person you've envisioned yourself to be.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good way of looking at it. I remember back in when I was in high school, we moved to a different city between the first and second year. And that was like a huge opportunity that I seized to just change my identity in the new school. Like, I felt like a loser at the school I came from, and was like, I don't know, I just felt like an outcast in many ways. And I was like, I want to just like play a different game in the new place I get to. And yeah, since nobody knew me, it was like, I could just step into being a new version of myself. The school I came from, I had very few friends, and I was always at home at the computer programming. And in the new school, I was like, you know what, I actually want to be social and meet people and make friends. And now I was out all the time, you know, hanging out with people, drinking beer, and playing music and all that stuff, going to shows. And yeah,
that's really cool. Because, you know, I think the people listening, we so much have that, you know, how you said the loser, we attached to labels and we carry it with us. Mm-hmm. And it affects how we interact with people. It affects how we lead companies. It affects how we run businesses. Mm-hmm.
What's interesting too is like that then plugs us into a system where we need to maintain this role. I need to maintain the role of loser so that other people in that group can maintain the role of like top dog or winner or whatever. And that makes it really hard to break out of this. It's something that I've been looking at for years, like family dysfunction. Mm-hmm. I think the estimate is like 95% of all families are dysfunctional to some degree or another. And these are systems that are extremely difficult to break out of. I think it's like breaking out of a dysfunctional family pattern is like the greatest accomplishment that you can have in life, because it's so hard. And so by changing name, in my case, I also moved from Denmark to New York, and that's definitely made it easier as well. So you like by removing yourself or like making some dramatic shifts, that can make it a lot easier. I'm not saying you have to do that, but yeah, the system is really powerful.
Plus, you're not carrying that mental attachment. It's almost like when you left Mars behind.
Yeah, and he still lived on in other people's minds and consciousnesses, but it wasn't affecting me to the same extent anymore.
Yeah. So how does mindset prevent people from going for the promotion or going after that business deal?
Right. I mean, yeah, exactly that way, right? That we were like, oh, I'm not worth that, and he doesn't like me, or he's not going to do that, or I'm like, I don't deserve it, or all these things. I mean, all these things just impact us. I was doing stand-up comedy at one point just for fun, and I just noticed I had this story in my head, people don't care to hear what I have to say. People aren't interested in it. I was like, so go up, imagine going up on stage with that story going on in your head. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's not going to help. And then you do that, and then you just get proof. Oh my God, people really don't care what I have to say. Well,
yeah. Our beliefs, we find evidence all around.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely, yeah.
Something to support our belief.
Yep.
So shifting out of it can be a challenge for some people. But once, like you said, once you catch the story, you can start shifting the belief.
Yeah. And I think just for a long time, it's just the practice of every time you catch yourself thinking those thoughts, most people believe that just because it's a thought in my head, it's true. There's some truth to it. There must be some truth to it, or it wouldn't be in my head. That's not true at all. We have all kinds of thoughts that have zero truth value or value at all. And just like realizing that just because it's a thought in my head does not mean it has any truth or any value. And just being like, it's just a thought. It's just a thought. And separating yourself from your thoughts in that way. And being like, all right,
you don't have to believe it either.
Not at all. No, please don't. And then that lets you then choose like, what's another thought that I could think that would be at least as true or truer and feel better.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to shift gears a little bit.
Sure.
I want you to, how did you get started creating Simplero, and tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah, so I was pretty much always making software, but Simplera came about because of that breakthrough into my life purpose and wanting to share the spiritual tools that I'd learned with other entrepreneurs. And then I looked around and I was like, all right, so I'm this programmer and an entrepreneur. How do I teach stuff? How do I put on a workshop or a seminar? I really didn't know much of anything about this world. And that's when I discovered online courses. And then I created my first online course or information product, as they call it, back in 2008, called Productivity for Programmers. And then just like went from there to I realized that I was not the only one struggling to figure out how to market my courses and seminars and workshops and stuff. So I started to teach that as well. And it just grew from there. I just had, I launched a very, very successful, it became a very successful for me, kind of teaching, coaching, masterminding business right around that, you know, 2008, 2009, New Year's, and started to write my own software for that business. And then it grew, like then other people wanted to use it and grew from there. And so like what I ended up doing was just like piece by piece, write everything, all the software that I needed to write this type of business. The first thing I did was the payment stuff. And then I did the email marketing stuff. And then I did the delivery stuff, the membership site where you deliver the content. And so, you know, Simplera has grown to be this software that solves everything, every piece of that puzzle that you need in order to sell online courses or even in-person workshops and seminars and coaching programs and all that stuff in one simple, easy to use tool that, just does everything that you need and none of what you don't. So it doesn't confuse people too much.
So I'm sure there's been many ahas as well as, oh my God, what just happened? moments. What are three of the greatest lessons you've learned in the process of putting this together?
Yes. One is it's the vision is super important. I did sort of a year or so into the process, I did a, oh my God, I just realized that my washer started beeping and now it's going to keep beeping until I do something about it. what do we do? Do I stop it?
It's not annoying me, so okay. It's up to you. If it's going to be right. Very distracting for you, we can pause.
Let me know if it gets too annoying and I'll turn it off.
Okay.
It's just one of those machines that just like, you're like, anyway. So one key moment was when I went back and I was like, I did this guided meditation that I've done with other people as well, where it was like, you know, going back to the spark, the moment that sparked the idea to create this. And I really believe that those moments were touched by some soul of something. And you reconnect with that and you feel into it. Like, what is it that you truly want to become here? And what is it that I need to become in order to serve this? Like, this is like sort of a disembodied soul of a product, of a project of some sort that needs me to be the earthly manifestation and like make it an earthly reality. That's how I look at it. Yeah. And so you connect with that and you're like, what do you want to become and what do you need from me? And what do I need to become in order to serve you? And that really informed me in terms of like, just a very, very clear in my gut feeling of what is this company? What is this product? And I think that's a really critical thing to have as a business person, as an entrepreneur, is that in your gut feeling of what is this and what isn't it? What are the values? How are we in this company? How is the product? Because that was my big problem with the first many, many years of my life as an entrepreneur, was that I didn't have that sense. And that meant that I was just like wavering with like, you know, read an article in Inc. magazine or Harvard Business Review or whatever. And then I was like, oh, we got to be this, we got to do that. Or like, you're always flying around. There's no substance to it. So that's a key thing. Yeah. What are some others? I mean, greatest moment recently was when I met my business partner, Nick. It's for me, it's always been a struggle to find good people to work with, you know, in large part because like I didn't know myself and, you know, I didn't value myself. And so it's like, it's hard to find the right matches when you're not really showing up as who you really are and you don't value that. It's just like a friend of a friend, and we met in Copenhagen. I was supposed to have dinner with my friend and then Thomas, and then he brought along Nick. He was like, do you mind if Nick comes along? I was like, that's fine. And then we ended up connecting and then starting to work together a little bit freelance. And we just both had this like, oh my God, there's just amazing chemistry here. And he's super, super smart. And I think we both just clicked over just how easy it is to work together because like we're aligned on values and we're both super intelligent. It's so hard for me to say, but it is true. And it's just been like a godsend. And it's one of those things where it's like, I've worked, you know, sort of systematically for a year and a half up to that moment with knowing that I needed to nail that piece of building a team around me that was really working. And it was something that my parents, both my parents had their own companies. My mom had a software company of 50 people, and my dad did like shop fitting for gas stations, 150, 200 people all over the world. So it wasn't like they didn't have a lot of people around them, but it was never really gelling for them, that whole team thing. It was always a struggle, especially like at the top level, finding the good leaders and the good partners and stuff. So I was like, I need to crack this. And I read books and I hired people and I fired them again. And I worked on the hiring process and I worked with my healer and I worked on my belief systems and all of these things. And then when I kind of was looking the other way, the universe just brings this person into my life, and it's just easy and it just clicks. But I think all the work that I did up till that point, you know, was helping part of it. It's just that then the process from doing all the work to the result is not linear.
One more. Just aha, or a mistake that you learned from.
Yeah. There's lots of mistakes. We did a pricing hike, or it wasn't really a pricing hike. It was more like when I started out, I was like, you know, I just had too low prices for it to be sustainable. So we had a plan that would start at, I think initially we even had like $0 a month and then some percentage of revenue, and then like a 25 a month and some percentage, and then 100 a month and some percentage, and things of that like that. And then I've like phased out the lowest one, and then I phased out the next one, but let people stay on the old plan for a while. And I like for like 2 years, and then after 2 years, I was like, this isn't working. And I was rewriting the pricing system. And then like, I would have to jump through all kinds of hoops in order to still maintain that older pricing tier. And then I gave people like a couple months notice to be like, hey, we're phasing out this plan. So you need to like upgrade or something.
So how did you stay motivated during that time?
So what happened was that I gave, like in my mind, I'd given people like 2 years, but in their minds, I'd given them like a month or two. So there's a lot of people who got upset with that. And I kind of dug in my heels and I was like, I got a little too tense around that. And so I ended up kind of staying with my decision, and just the people who reached out personally, I would be like, hey, I'll give you like another 4 or 5 months if that helps, and then, you know, work it out that way. But it didn't feel very good. Mm-hmm. So I think just the lessons for me was like, you know, soften my heart a little bit and like notice when my heart is hardening and take a little breath. And it's what happens to me is like, I will feel attacked. And then when I feel attacked, it's really hard for me to stay open. But that's exactly when we need to stay open the most.
So when have you had your greatest stroke of inspiration when it comes to creativity and leading to innovation?
Hmm. Yeah. That is, it's probably a hard one because like creativity is kind of what I do. It's like my days are best when I'm just creating all the time. Like this, we're talking here and I'm just making things up as we go along, right? I don't have a script or like I need to say these things, and every interview is different and I come up with new things to say. I write software, I make music, I make the show. Everything I do is creative, and that's really my type, and that's what I aim to do like 80% of the day if I can. It was a big moment for me 2.5 years ago when I was at Burning Man, and I was out in the deep playa, as they say, in the desert in the middle of the night, roaming around alone. And I got into this tent, and there was a guy sitting in, there's like 30 people in there, and they had these LEDs in the ceiling that were responding to light or to sound. And then he sat there singing John Legend's "What Would I Do Without Your Smart Mouth?" And he just sang it like top to bottom, and everybody's quiet and just listening. I was like, I really want to kill this guy right now. I was like, I knew I didn't really want to kill him. I just wanted to be him. And so I was like, I need to start singing. And that's when I started to take lessons. And that led to a lot of breakthroughs in terms of like just the distance between. I thought that I had like a horrible voice and no pitch, and there was no way that I would ever be able to really sing, to being like, oh, I can totally sing. And I've got like, you know, I'm not an incredible singer, but I've got everything that I need in order to do commercial pop music with my voice. And it also led to like, I was like, I just want to sing a little for myself. And my vocal teacher was like, you can totally do something in the music business if you want. You can write songs, you can make music. That got me into production and songwriting and all this stuff. And I'm like, I can totally do something here. I mean, I have a lot to learn, and it's harder than it looks, but it's totally doable.
So what have you done to push through those fears? Because I'm going to put you on the spot and I'm going to say, can you grab one of those guitars off the wall?
And perform something?
Yeah.
I can.
It'll be our first musician on the show giving us some live tunes.
Yes. You're gonna grab this one. So the trouble is, you didn't warn me quite enough for me to actually tune it in advance.
So that's okay. We'll roll with you.
That's good. What are we gonna do? We're gonna do a song on the live here.
Live here on the Millionaire Woman Show, and all our listeners who are at the gym or driving toward their business appointment, they're going to be listening Calvin Carelli.
Oh my God.
And priming their day to go after with purpose and passion what they really want to do.
This is exciting.
Calvin, you've had a really interesting life, interesting story, and I can see how it's helped you also have that golden thread of pushing through fears and rising to any challenges that come your way. So I'm sure that everyone listening here is taking down nuggets of information, going to have to replay the podcast, share it with their friends, because they need to hear the message that you can show up as a different person every day. And I think you're inspiring many people.
Thank you. Thank you. You're so much putting me on the spot here.
That's what I do best.
It's your genius. All right. Thank you. You gotta warn me. All right. So I'm gonna try this one. So I wrote a song for my first grade teacher. Oh, like you've heard this story of like there is like when you grow up. I grew up in a family where I did not feel like I belonged at all, right? I think a lot of people feel that way, and what makes you really survive in those kind of circumstances is if there's one person that you feel sees you. I think the story was like if Hitler had that one person, things would have looked very differently. And so my first grade teacher, her name is Edith, was that person for me. I had one more person, which was my mom's sister, my aunt Tana. But Edith was definitely that person. She was with us in that class first to fourth grade. And then actually in 2008, after my that awakening to my life purpose, I saw just randomly, I didn't read the paper, but one day randomly I looked at the obit pages or the where they announced deaths in the paper.
Yeah.
I saw that her husband had died. He was a politician. He was in the cabinet at one point. And just happened to see that. And so I decided to reach out to her. And I did. And today we're friends. And she's an incredible person. So she went from that to doing all kinds of crazy things and charitable work and become a coach and organizational psychology and speaker and author. She's written 25 books.
Wow.
8 of which are cookbooks, and so which cooking is another passion of mine. So yeah, it's super fascinating. So I wrote this song for her. Here we go.
Okay.
I was always a weird one, at least in my head. Oh, that's not going so well, is it? I was always the weird one, at least in my head. Refusing to forget how to love myself. Thought I was crazy. In this small town, started writing down my dreams, got lost in my TV, the mucating. And you said, ooh, while we're freaking out, we're spinning around at 67,000 miles an hour. So let me show you how to escape the crowds, build yourself a rocket and forget this town. How you woke me, I was just a kid, stuck inside the nightmare I'm living in. The world was open and it took some time to let it in, but it all began when you came. You said, ooh. I'm used to playing this on the piano.
That's okay. That's awesome.
While we're freaking out, we're spinning around at 67,000 miles an hour. So let me show you how to escape the crowds. Build yourself a rocket and forget this town. And forget this town. All right.
Thank you, Calvin. I know we put you on the spot, but sometimes that spontaneity just has to jump out and teach people a lesson that nothing has to be perfect. At the moment, you just go with it. And as you say, everything is as it should.
Yes.
I want to thank you so much for this phenomenal interview, giving us your time today, sharing your talents, sharing your software, Simplero. How can people stay in touch with you?
Yeah, well, Simplero.com. We have this thing where we give people an unlimited free trial. So there's certain functions that you don't get, so that you need to pay us if you want to actually run a business on it, but you can stay in trial mode and basically try all the functions and play around with it for as long as you need. So go and sign up for a trial and check it out if you're at all in that market. People really love it. We have a lot of people who switch from other systems and are just so happy there. Best kept secret, which we need to change that. So it's not the best kept secret, but people love it. And then there's my personal site, calvincorelli.com, where I do this show where I will also sometimes bring out my guitar, but most more likely the piano. And then I talk about all the things that we talked about on the show and more. And I also the other day I shot a video showing people how to make sausage. cooking. We I teach like how to make drinks, and yeah, just interview people and just have a good time. So business, life, all the good stuff.
You're a very fun person to be around. I hope that we meet in person and we get to hang out and you can mix a few drinks and I can listen to some more tunes.
Thank you. I would love that. I would love that. Anytime you're in New York, let me know.
That would be awesome. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you again, Calvin, for joining our show, and everyone on the Millionaire Woman Show. We're so glad you could join us. As you can see, you want to live a life full, driven with purpose. Go check out Calvin's website. He has so much to offer you, variety, interest, and so many exciting things that you can be doing to add interest to your life and helping discover your purpose. No matter where you are, everyone has that one person in their life who sees you for who you are. And that person could be next to you. It could be your first grade teacher. But remember the lessons that you learn from them. All it takes is for one person to believe in you for you to go after your dreams. And if you can hang on to that, you can break through anything. So I would love for you to share this podcast. Let other people know about it. Help them shift through some of their tough challenges that they might be in. Subscribe to the Millionaire Woman Show. Give us a 5-star high five rating. So, and email me at Deborah@DeborahKozowski.com. to let us know about the nuggets and how this has helped you live rich from the inside out. As Muhammad Gandhi says, be the change you want to see in the world and go out and make today great. Take care, everyone, and thanks, Calvin.
Thank you so much, Deborah. It's a pleasure.